Yeah, this one actually has like stuff involved, and hopefully the sound will be better across the board. And if I sit down and actually work on this stuff, maybe it'll be like not shitty. So we'll see.
I guess my one question is like,
Audiences.
this is not streaming somewhere, right?
Correct. That is correct. It
Okay,
is.
good.
It's just
Okay.
streaming
But it
into their.
could.
Yeah, it could. It could.
Yeah. But there is, okay, so there is a
Because
private
there's
chat, but
message
I
from.
can't pop it out, apparently.
Yeah, there's a private chat.
But
Check,
you can't
check.
pop it out, apparently, so.
Yeah.
Pop it out. Yeah, not like to the side completely.
Yeah, that's what I want because I want to be able to like big screen so I can see y'all.
Play local audio or play local video. Share screen. Okay. Settings.
There we go.
There's a
Oh.
slightly miserable man.
You don't even know the fucking half of it.
Oh
My fucking
no. I know a
life.
tenth
Oh
of
my
it,
God. Oh
but
no.
you attract broken kayaks.
Dude, it's
It's
amazing.
What the hell?
so dumb.
So
So
amazing.
ridiculous.
So I have two kayaks that I have paid very good money for
Have
this
we started the
year.
podcast yet before we start that part?
I mean, we're
Have we ever
recording.
stopped podcasting?
I
I don't
don't
think
know. I just
so.
want to make sure this is on the podcast. So sorry,
All
Paul. Start it. Start
right.
again.
Well, JJ, you can edit that bit out. So yeah, I have two kayaks I have purchased this year. The first worked for 6 months or so and then cracked. And so they tell me destroy it, which they mean cut it in half, which was
So
fun. Cutting a kayak in
fun.
half with a chainsaw was a lot of fun. But now they're like 5 weeks after when they were supposed to have shipped a new one, they're like, yeah, no one is picking it up from the shipping companies. We promise it's here on the dock, but it's taking weeks and no one wants to pick it up. Which, come on. All
Seriously.
right, sure. A couple of days I'll buy, a couple of weeks, So the other one, while I was waiting for that, I bought myself a new kayak from Hobie and it came all busted and broken. Like totally messed up.
Oh
Like there's a massive dent and crack in one side, there's scuff marks, there's a massive, like, looks like someone's like dragged a screwdriver
no.
down the edge of it.
Oh.
And of course they're like, happened in freight, so therefore we're not responsible. And I'm like, hey, I gave you all $3,200 for this thing. You all can be responsible for it. And how does a freight company gouge a kayak without damaging the shipping material? Tell me that.
Yeah, that doesn't add up at all.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, they've taken so long arguing with this that they are now completely out of stock of the kayak for months into the future. And so now they're like, well, we can give you money back. I'm like, just get me a goddamn kayak. Like, I know you'll have like warranty hulls sitting in a warehouse. Send me one. But they won't because it's a freight problem, not a warranty problem or some nonsense. So that's my life right now. I have vacation coming up next Friday, so a week from Friday. And I'm supposed to spend a week on a kayak. And currently, I have zero kayaks. I own two kayaks, I have zero usable kayaks.
That's a pain in the ass. I'm sorry.
So yeah, that's a small part of my exciting life.
Oh man, kayak conundrum. I was like looking for some way to make this fun, and I realized it's just not fun. That sucks. That really sucks. On a
Oh
much
boy.
smaller scale, the first time I was using the disc golf discs that Laura was kind enough to send me. I had so much fun tossing them around. I just happened to get a little out of my league with the driver, and it is buried somewhere in Theodore Worth Park in Minneapolis,
Hey,
Minnesota.
you lost your first disc. Congratulations. Yay! It's like the first time you
Yeah,
take down
Babby,
production.
Babby's first
Oh, it
disc.
was so
Hey,
sad.
first
I'm
time you
like,
take down production.
yeah, exactly. I looked for it for 35 minutes and got poison ivy for it. So I feel like I did my disc a service, but somebody will
Did
find
you
it
label it?
eventually.
Did you label
Yeah,
it?
I put my
Okay, good.
name and phone number in right before tossing it into oblivion, so it was perfect. But that instinct to huck it like you're like a first pull in an ultimate game was just I couldn't stop myself from doing it, and it just fucking buried like completely wrong style of motion. But I've been practicing and it's really fun. I'm super thankful that I have one out of three or two out of the three discs still
to my name. Yeah, very good. Yay. It's always good to lose your first disc. Then when you lose it and eventually find it, maybe possibly if you're lucky,
yeah,
it's even more special because it came back to you. Yeah. Just make sure you wash it in Dawn dish soap when it comes back.
That's a great tip.
Get all that poison ivy or a shawl off of it before you try to throw it again. Trust me.
That sounds like experience.
It's a little bit of experience. Just a little bit.
Well, JJ, how about we back up for a second and you can tell us what we're doing and why we're in this different tool.
Yes.
That no one can see us in.
No, everyone can.
Yeah, nobody knows we're in a different tool.
Everyone can see it.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, exactly. It's a visual medium.
Visual medium.
So just to break the fourth wall here, we normally use Zoom.
Fourth wall.
Yeah, exactly. We use Zoom to record this. And we've gotten some feedback saying that there's been some issues with some of the sound for us. And if you didn't know, Paul and I stream every Thursday using a piece of software called Restream Now. And Restream actually has the ability to capture audio from all four of us at the same time so I can mix it easier. And also, I've been using something called Audio Hijack now to be able to get the audio directly from the website too. So hopefully going forward, if this actually works in the long term, we'll have a better sounding podcast, and we'll be able to like not have me speaking really, really softly in the background while Broberg is telling us something or something like that. It'll actually be normalized so people can enjoy our voices a little bit better.
So professional, much wow.
I know, getting there slow but surely. We're getting there, slow but surely.
So. I love it. All right, well, what do folks have on the kitchen docket here?
I don't have it on the docket, but I will say it anyway. I went up to ZCon this past week, so it was very exciting because I got to see the brand new Z. The new one that's coming out. So that was lots of fun to go see.
Really big server.
We were the first.
It's really big server.
I know. It's gigantic. It's blue and it has 400 horsepower. Yeah, exactly. 400 horsepowers. So amazingness.
But what does that convert to in gigahertz per second?
It's fast. I'll leave it at that. 360 foot-pounds of torque, I think, is what the numbers are. Anyway, long story short, it was really cool to see because we were the first ones to actually see it in person outside of the official launch event in New York City. They brought it just to ZCon, so that was awesome. We made it home in pieces. The car mostly all made it home, except for a few pieces that we had to cut off with a knife at a random truck stop type place in Brownsville, Texas.
Okay, so a regular
trip for us. That's fine. Trip. This is normal.
I feel like we need details here.
Paul, can you translate?
Yeah.
Like, you seem to be the babble fish on this front.
So, all right. We have a 300ZX, and it has the front bumper, and then there's a splitter on the bottom. The car is low. It's low. I'll just leave it at it's low. We made it up there and we were literally pulling into the parking spot after driving the whole way up to have the splitter hit the curb as we were pulling into the spot, and that ripped the splitter off of the bumper. Now, what that means is that you can't really drive that on the highway, and we were about to go up Pike's Peak in 2 days. So, had to take that to a body shop. Huge shout out to the body shop in Colorado Springs that got us in last minute on a Monday morning. They went and Status Symbol Auto, that's the name of the place. They took two welding plates, put the splitter back up, and mechanically squashed it between these two welding plates so it stayed on. It was great. It worked beautifully the whole time. Then we were driving home and there was like a really, really steep driveway that then went out to the road. And normally we're pretty good on that, but we were in a bit of a hurry trying to keep up with the rest of our caravan. And we came out of that driveway and caught the splitter on the asphalt and bent the splitter underneath the car. So we had to, and we didn't realize it for a good 100 miles or something. Got to a truck stop, realized it had to take a knife to it and cut the splitter off where it fractured, and put that into the trunk of the car. And then we drove home. So that's my exciting story from ZCon, along with getting to see the new Z. So, yay.
Nice.
That's the story. Cool. I was going to say, everyone here is just kind of like glass-eyed. So sorry to those of you like listening into the podcast and going, this person's insane.
No, we have an ungodly.
We brought you on for your insanity.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, and we have a weird amount of people that love Fast and the Furious. So like, I feel like you're hitting at least half
That's
of our
not
audience.
Weird.
Yeah.
Is that weird?
Disturbing. You're right. Disturbing is the word.
Disturbing
I was
is not the right word either.
Concerning.
If you didn't notice, somebody in the Slack channel actually asked about watching Vin Diesel short film.
I saw that. That's amazing. I love it.
So we've got Vin to watch, get one other fan. Though the response
family.
Saying
it's family. Well,
that's right. That's right. One more of the family.
It's all about the family.
But unfortunately, it was not exactly what's the word I'm looking for. Positive feedback on Vin's little short, but that's fine. If you're listening to this real time, scroll back in the channel, or if you haven't joined, we're on the SDT Slack. You can join us.
And we SDT? We did, what's SDT for those of you who
know.
Don't know?
Yeah, so software defined talk. Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh. That was adorable.
Yeah.
Hi. We're getting so professionalness.
I know, right? Hey. Right.
Okay.
Well, let's not count those chickens before they gestate. Okay. Speaking of food, I don't think I'm going to be good on transitions today from the looks of it. Did I get JJ'd in the last week or so? Damn.
Hey, well, right.
There we go.
Yeah, with me being gone. I did something DevRels are supposed to do, but aren't doing or haven't done for 18 months. I flew in an airplane.
Actually, that's the one thing you're not supposed to do right now.
Yeah.
FYI.
Yeah. Well,
as long as you didn't take Delta.
Yeah, exactly.
As long as you didn't fly internationally, it's fine.
So I flew to the Dominican Republic. And no joke. My concern about flying is a little bit not as crazy. The amount of people that were actually in the airport were low. Granted, during when I was flying, it was during the low periods, which makes sense. The place I went was COVID friendly, and it was an all-inclusive resort where they actually advertised.
Not COVID friendly as in like friendly to COVID. You're talking about like COVID protection friendly, like
exactly
people get vaccinated and wear masks. Yeah. Okay,
everyone was encouraged to clarify 6 feet of each other and to share food.
Cough exactly. on one another, you know.
Yep. Okay, everyone, turn to your left and lick
exactly. We licked some doorknobs. I thought that was part of the Dominican Republic way.
Wow, that's a different podcast.
Yeah, so. Every meal was a buffet.
There you go.
There's no utensils.
Now, was it the doorknob licking that got you banned off OnlyFans?
Oh, there you go. Actually, that's a pretty good transition. That's a pretty good transition. But they pulled that one back. I'm back on OnlyFans. Don't worry. Everything's okay. But yeah, the cool thing about this place, which I really do want to give them props, is they allowed us as a family to have pool time like by ourselves in a little corner. We were able to be out on the beach by ourselves. Everything was all the restaurants and all had like not 6 feet. We're talking like 10 to 15 feet away from one another. It was really, really spread out. I felt very, very safe, and not having my laptop and work email and Slack on my phone was a big step for me. And all of a sudden I realized what people work for big companies, because the world didn't catch on fire when I was gone. That was an amazing
feeling.
No one
will notice you're gone. Exactly. It is one of the most relieving and terrifying feelings.
Exactly. Exactly. So yeah, that was my last week. And I will say.
Now, JJ, were you disappointed when you discovered that the Dominican Republic is not a theme park based on Dominic Toretto?
I plead the sixth.
This is not an educational resource.
I played the sixth sense on that one.
Oh, Jesus, Paul. But it was in there.
Read your freaking constitution. Too fast and too furious coming there from Paul. Too fast and too furious.
There you go. Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
It wasn't a theme park, but it did have to do with family.
It's true.
Yep.
That's true.
I don't know.
We are so going to get you the next.
If they only release a Fast and the Furious movie every couple of years, is that intermittent fasting?
Hey!
Wait. You made that joke like 3 podcasts ago. Hold on a second. You can't.
Oh, did I?
Damn it. Because I thought it was really awesome, but you made it like three podcasts ago.
Damn it.
He was hoping we'd goldfish it like we normally do. Right? Like, what?
Exactly.
Oh, man. Well, I want to talk to y'all about some food. And I heard. Food.
Tasty.
Oh, it's kind of something we like here. And I'm both concerned and excited by Paul adding this one. JG discovered ceviche.
Yes. Okay.
Do
so,
tell.
So as most people know by now, but I'll say it anyway. I live in Austin, Texas, as with a majority of our podcasters, hosts.
Fresh seafood capital.
Exactly.
Of the country.
So we don't really get fish here. I mean, we can get fish. Don't get me wrong, but we're not by the ocean, so it's harder for us to get fish. Granted, we can get a lot of catfish, and I'll make that joke later. So I didn't grow up with it. So turns out when I was in Dominican Republic, they had ceviche, and I'd only had it like once before in my life, and I didn't really know what it was, and I was like, ugh. But then this time I had it, and started eating it, and I was like, why have I not had more of this stuff in my life? And my wife, who does not eat fish very much, she was like, JJ, if you get Paul to teach you how to make this, we will have this all the time. In a conversation with Paul recently, I was like, so Paul, how do I make ceviche, and isn't it raw? And then Paul quickly made sure that I don't know what I'm talking about, and said, we should save this for the podcast.
Yeah. Well, so while we should insult JJ all we want, let's not assume all of our listeners know what ceviche is. So,
hey,
Paul,
I don't know what ceviche is, so I am listening.
Yes.
Wow. Oh, dang. Well, Matt, how about you tell us what ceviche is?
Oh, because this is the...
I need somebody I can tell.
Okay, cool. Well, I mean... So to the best of my knowledge, ceviche is a form of cooked fish, and the way it's cooked is actually with the acidity, some sort of acidity. I think it's traditionally like some sort of citrus fruit, a bath of citrus fruit with onion and peppers and tomatoes, and you submerge usually like a thin white fish into it, chopped up potentially, and then submerge for not a very long time. It's cooked by the acidity, the reaction of the proteins to the acid. Give me
you heat yeah, things.
I mean, that's
to cook them.
That's pretty much spot
so
on.
you activate proteins using some form of reaction, and that reaction can be from the heat of a pan.
Correct.
Or it can be from the actually, I can't remember what it is about acid. There's something about the way it reacts to proteins that does the exact same thing.
So is this basically the same thing then? And I'm going to really annoy everybody. Is this the same thing as lutefisk, where it's basically cooked by the reaction?
What is lutefisk?
I actually don't know exactly how lutefisk is made.
I know it's buried, like packed and lie and buried. Like that's what people have always
told
me. So
that's the opposite.
Oh, in that case,
because lie is base, the highest end of base versus acid, which is the other end of that same scale of your pH scale. So either end of it, you are still cooking something. I'm not good enough at physics. Chemistry is
like my least favorite science. So,
right.
Oh man, I feel like
nobody likes chemistry.
Yeah, this is what got me into cooking recently. Is just understanding the chemical reactions of things is so much more fun. To me, I don't know why.
Sorry.
So there's two things that cooking really does. One is the chemical reaction that changes the structure of the protein and et cetera of the foods. The other thing is the killing and destruction of bacteria, parasites, and other nasty things. And vinegar kind of does both to some degree as well. But from the parasite side of things, it's probably not as good. So you still need to make sure that you are using fish that is safe to be eaten raw.
Okay.
And that means you're eating fish from the ocean, not fish from freshwater, because there are less parasites in the ocean that can transfer to humans in a way that make them ill. Or it needs to have been frozen for long enough to have killed off the bad things. Right. And so often people will use like tilapia and stuff for ceviche.
You make it sound so fancy.
Whatever. Tilapia.
And that's kind of okay under two conditions. One, you've bought it in and it's been like individually quick frozen in the big bag and you thaw it in a safe manner. It's kind of okay to use then, but you also have a really bad taste in fish. Mm. So I question why you would do a treatment like ceviche to a fish that's not all that great.
Right.
Now, different people like different fish, and I'm being a bit of a snob there, but that's kind of how I feel about it. So I like to go for, and you kind of said it, like a firm white fleshed fish from the ocean. And you do cook it in acid, and it can be any acid. Traditionally, you would use bitter orange because that was the main citrus that you would find down that way. And that's also the main citrus you see in a lot of like Mexican marinades, like al pastor. And
is bitter orange old orange juice?
No.
No, it's an orange that hangs out with you for a week.
Oh, that was good. Oh, that was a hard burn right there.
Oh, wow. That was hard. My bad.
Too hard, too soon. Too fast, too furious.
But as long as the acidity is right, you can use any acid. And then depending on the size chunks, you'll cook it for longer in that bath. But you also have to be careful you don't overcook it because it can kind of get gross and rubbery as well.
Soapy, right?
And then the...
Isn't that the term for it?
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And you can also do things like shrimp and other things as well. I've made some pretty delicious shrimp ceviches. You do them on like a tostada as a little appetizer. It's quite delicious. I cooked that as my appetizer when I did a Mexican pop-up in Tokyo.
So just had to drop that in there.
Just
drop that in there.
Oh, you all don't travel to Tokyo to do a pop-up restaurant every once in a while?
An Australian white guy from Texas doing a Mexican pop-up in Japan. The layers.
Like circles there.
Layers.
I mean, if you're gonna culturally appropriate, you might as well culturally.
Yeah, you might as well be 2 to 3 layers deep, like
Paul, you're just
inception
like an
appropriation.
What can we say? You're just like an onion, so many layers, and when we start peeling the back, I start crying. So
that was good. That was really good.
Oh, well, that's kind of interesting. So the fish then would be like what they call sushi grade. Would that be the right term for it?
I get sushi
salmon.
Grade is perfect.
That's really what I know is like, go get some salmon. Yeah. That's good cut.
Yeah. So one thing with like salmon is it's a fattier fish and they don't necessarily work as well.
Well, I mean, just in terms of cooking fish, like that's what I know. Sure. It's like, go get a really good cut of salmon. That's about it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Now there are some salmon based ceviche or I think escabeche, I think, is the more standard culinary term for cooking meat in acid. Mm. And ceviche is kind of a child of the greater escabeche group.
So
because you can do the same with any kind of meat or protein. The leaner the better, because the fats don't cook in the acid in the same way they would in heat.
Yeah, it's not like getting something to 200 degrees in an oven. It's right. Yeah, it's like a very low and slow type vibe, but it can't break down the fats.
I gotta ask this because I know someone else is gonna have this question because I have it. Isn't that what they say? You have a question, someone else obviously has that question.
Away.
Yeah. So ceviche isn't like pickling, right? Where you can like put it in a jar and like have it there for n number of time dates or day. Like it's something you do then, and then you eat it almost immediately, right? Like you can't store it for a long period of time.
I mean, you could if you really wanted to. Like you can pickle and jar fish, right? Like pickled herring, roll mops. They're all forms of like pickle, but that's a very specific type of pickling, and it's not it's I mean effectively the same process just over a longer or shorter period of time.
Yeah,
but like don't throw some goldfish into vinegar and then like eat it a year later.
Well, the point being trying to say if I make a bunch of ceviche, I shouldn't like sit on it for like a week or something like that. Like,
no, you should like you want to eat it fresh
because of the
ceviche
bacteria
is best eaten right away. Exactly. Like not even the bacteria; it's just the texture and taste.
Yeah, yeah, it's like the acid will continually. It's like imagine you're like slowly cooking just the outside of the meat continuously for as long as you're storing it. Like it's gonna get pretty gross.
So you're telling me I put it in a sous vide bag for 48 hours.
Like you dumb.
I was
sous vide it for 8 days.
Right. I was just gonna say that, JJ. It's like if you got a delicious steak, stuck it in a bag, and sous vide it for a few days.
And figured
which
out
no one would ever do.
Technically,
no one should ever do that.
Technically it's edible, JJ. Technically it's edible.
Yeah.
So
that one.
I feel like we should do some homework and come back to this because there's a really interesting nuance between like a cooking something like through a acid or a base versus fermentation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know enough of the nuance to talk to what we were just talking about, but I think it is a really interesting chemical conversation that's worth diving deeper into.
Yeah. The shorter answer to kick it off, but we should definitely dig into it and research more, is when you ferment something, you're actually creating your own acid through, you're not creating it. The friendly cultures and the yeast and bacterias are effectively creating that acid for you. And short answer, it's the same thing, just done a different way.
Mm.
So vinegar-based pickling is basically a shortcut to for what you get with fermentation. The result isn't exactly the same because you generally will cook before you quick pickle or whatever. But the end result is targeting the same thing.
Interesting. I learn something new every time we do this podcast just because I'm like, my version of cooking is fairly basic and... You know, like I need to get a meal on the table every night, you know, so it's.
Well, you're not going to make ceviche if you're cooking
no,
basic.
No,
hey,
it's not.
Hey,
I could have some lutefisk, though.
That was a sick burn.
Yeah. It was very nicely done. Acidic very nicely burn. Done. But
acidic burn.
I get a little more adventurous when it comes to like baking things. And, you know, what I really want to do is canning and, you know, making jams and stuff like that at some point. But I just don't have the patience right now to sit and do it properly. So
here's my problem with making jams and things is then you eat them and there's a lot of sugar that goes.
But it's so good anyway.
That's the sugar.
So good. Yeah.
Well, so what I will say is Landon's aunt will send us homemade jams and stuff, and she like somehow she doesn't use as much sugar as everybody else. I don't know how she does it. No, she doesn't. Trust me. Like you think so, but no, I've seen her do it. I've seen how much she puts in. I'm like, I want to learn all of the ways that you make jams and jellies and things like that. But she's in upstate New York. So, you know,
you can get low sugar pectins that set at a lower sugar level that can help.
You're a pectin. But
generally then.
I guess that kind of might transition to the next one?
Sure.
I don't want to read this card out loud, so I'm going to make Paul read it because he's the one who put it on the board.
Oh, I know what this one is. So this just came across my news board today. And our good friend, Jeff Bezos.
The bee's knees.
Right? He recently went into space.
What?
He did.
He's a spaceman.
Oh, boy.
Apparently, he's not an astronaut because we decided that we had to change the rules for astronauts because we didn't want him to be an astronaut. But he went up in a rocket, and it had a particular shape to it. And you can now buy models of his rocket on the internet that very much resemble the phallic shape that you would expect. And they cost, I do not joke, $69.
Wow. Perfect. I mean, it should come with a contract.
Yeah. Sorry, it should what?
It should come with a contract to work in an Amazon factory. Like, you might as well get...
So shipped in a bottle then? Because you might need it.
Well, you just unscrew the top and it's a toilet and a toy rocket.
It's really... You couldn't ask for a better bonus.
Better what?
Bonus.
We're children. Did you notice?
Well.
Okay, so speaking of things that are ridiculous, Paul, why don't you like s'mores?
I need to know this. That came up last time, but I need to know.
Okay.
Why don't you like s'mores?
No, this is not settled.
You can't take shit chocolate, shit cookies, and shit marshmallows, and somehow make them delicious.
But you don't do that. You get good stuff.
You make your own marshmallows.
Nobody does.
You get Cadbury's chocolate, and you make your own graham crackers.
No, not even Cadbury's. What are you talking about? You go local, right? So you get good marshmallows. You get local chocolate. Dark chocolate's really good for this. And then you get like homemade graham cracker. They are amazing. The other thing you can actually put next to the fire that does really, really well. People think I'm insane, but this is delicious. Take an Oreo, put it on the stones next to a fire pit. Let it kind of warm up. It gets so gooey and amazing in the middle. Mm. I'm obsessed with. I call them s'moreos, because they're delicious.
Oh,
yes,
you should. They're
amazing.
Definitely make some money from that because that's a s'moreos. Great name.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I don't know, man. I'm all for nostalgia on this one, which is probably something you're lacking here. Which is, you know, cheap ass Hershey's chocolate bars, cheap ass graham crackers, and like one metric, who the hell knows what's in it, marshmallow. And somehow it's a gestalt, like the whole is more than the sum of its parts.
And you have to get like the marshmallow, you put just close enough to the fire that it might actually get set on fire. But maybe not, because if it gets set on fire, it actually tastes a little bit better. Because you have to get it on fire and real quick burn it out, because then that gets that nice crust to it. It's really good. I'm a little obsessed with marshmallows.
So,
s'mores.
So I really enjoy when you really burn the shit out of the marshmallow, and then you just slide the outer bit off.
Oh, okay.
And then you just have the gooey middle. Yeah.
It is like cutting all the edges off of a brownie and just saying, you know what, this is garbage. Just eating the middle.
Are you one of those people, Paul, who like when you eat a piece of pizza, you leave the crust behind?
No, the crust's the best.
Okay, good. I just need to check because, you know, sometimes the people who are the ones who cut the edges off the brownie are the same ones who won't eat the crust off of a pizza.
My favorite people to share a pizza with are the ones that don't.
Because then you get the tasty bits. Yes, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're basically eating like a delicious loaf of stretchy bread.
Oh, so good!
Right, and the best thing is you dip it in your Coke, and it's so good.
What the?
No.
We're so with you, Paul. Why do you have to ruin it?
Like
we're in such a great buildup, and you just bring us down like that. What the hell are you talking about?
Yeah, nice. So I will say, just because we're on the topic of like campfire treats. Here is a campfire treat for any of you who ever go out camping and want some kind of like really fun cake to take with you. Take an orange and you're going to slice the top 2/3 off, hollow it out with a spoon, eat the orange. It'll be tasty. While you're doing that, make angel food cake mix, or really any box cake mix, but I do angel food cake because it only requires water, no eggs, so I don't have to bring eggs to the campground. Take that, fill that up in the peel of the orange, the bigger peel. Fill that up about halfway through that. Put the top of the orange back on top, wrap it up in foil, put it in the coals. Let that cook. It is an amazing orange cake that will get cooked in the fire. Oh, yeah. No, that's something we used to do when we would go backpacking. That
sounds delicious.
Because, like, you could always fit an orange and angel food cake, and you always had water. So it was one of those wonderful desserts that after you were hiking for like, 14 hours into your campsite, you would then set that all up and do the whole thing, and it would be the best way to end your day. So
that's wild.
That sounds great. And, like, your food, your cake little packets are small and thin, and you could probably stick them in a Ziploc bag and then, you know, have multiple oranges. But what I would do is, if I was like car camping, is I would pre-mix that in a like a squeezy bottle, and that way you can like squeezy bottle straight into the orange.
No, it works great. Yeah. It works great. So that was one of like my favorite ways of bringing dessert with me on the trail. So
nice.
And if you have it in a squeezy bottle, you can also just make pancakes straight out of that as well.
Works great.
We all win.
This is great. This is clearly people that don't camp that much, but like
I was speaking for myself purely.
Oh,
Matt does not look like the kind of guy who goes camping on the regular.
Really, look at this hair. This is camping hair. No, I call myself
campy hair. Maybe
I call myself a great follower. I'm a super thought follower when it comes to outdoors activities.
That is
like
you're definitely in the sheeple category of
them. Without a doubt. Like I have all the confidence I need because I hiked the Grand Canyon in August in like 110 degree weather, like starting at 3 a.m.
You
to
followed
avoid
somebody into that. You followed somebody.
It was
into that.
Really real dumb. Real dumb timing. We had guaranteed camping or like spots in the Phantom Ranch at the bottom of the canyon, which you have to reserve like 2 years ahead of time.
Was it hard to find?
Hey.
It did try to ghost us, but no, we showed up. Adele and I, my wife and I were like, are we actually this kind of people? We're like, yeah, we're badass. We've done trips. And then we're like, we've got to like maybe switch up our day-to-day lives for a while to prep for this. And then we didn't. And then we showed up and hiked 40 miles in 4 days.
Nice.
But I made it.
I mean, you're still here.
Still here. Yeah, so all that to say, you can be pretty subpar and good at outdoor stuff.
I feel like as long as you have one person who knows what they're doing with you, and a satellite phone, you're probably going to be safe no matter what.
And when half the people I was a little concerned, and then you see people coming down with big, like rotund bellies on top of like jackasses, like coming down with their bags on another jackass. And you're just like, nope, I'm like donkeys bringing people around. Like, you know, you're fine. No one's going to let you die.
That donkey knows exactly the donkey knows where to go too. It's one of those donkeys.
The donkey really knows where food is.
Exactly.
The donkey's going home to food.
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. So.
Well, in other news that came up this week, I saw that you saw, Paul, that Google decided to make a new work from home policy. Walk us through this.
Yeah, you know, this is a little bit old now, so I have to remember what it was. But I think basically what happened was Google decided that they will allow people to continue working from home, but they are going to recalculate their salary based on where they're now living. And there's a very good chance that your salary will go down because there's a very good chance you've gone from one of their hubs, you know, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, to somewhere cheaper. Like, I don't know, Idaho or some other potato-loving place. And therefore, they want to pay you less because they can.
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess it's all about maximizing shareholder value or whatever, because they've clearly shown that they have the money to pay you the salary they're currently paying you.
Right.
So it's not like you've suddenly become less affordable, or they're suddenly having to pay more for you. They're paying the exact same amount. It's just you've changed where you live.
Right. It's and clearly
that,
like
that whole concept. That whole concept just rubs me the wrong way. Like, especially for like a highbrow tech, you know, company. Like, we're supposed to be enabling this like smart work culture of work from anywhere, and you know, all these collaborative tools and all this stuff, and then we're gonna like put up all these barriers and things in the way of actually making that a reality. It's just dumb. Yeah. Like, why do you care where I live? Like, me moving to Idaho is like a savvy financial choice, and it's not affecting Google's ability to like extract, you know, lines of code out of me, especially because I could work remote from San Francisco and retain my San Francisco fees.
How do you get?
Or I can work from.
How do you get Pete's Coffee in Idaho?
I guarantee you, they have some kind of franchise up there already.
So, joke being that Pete's Coffee is like the San. Isn't that San Francisco Coffee against Starbucks? Isn't Pete's Coffee? Am I really out of touch? I'm probably out of touch.
Isn't that Seattle?
I was thinking, I thought you were going to go more pretentious with Blue Bottle, but okay.
I don't drink coffee, so I can't answer any of this.
Yeah, really? I can't drink coffee. I only drink tea.
Oh, yep. Wow.
Yep. It's highly entertaining when I have too much caffeine. Don't try to sneak it to me either. I've had that happen to me before because somebody wanted to see what happens.
That's not right.
Yeah. It was funny afterwards. Like, thinking.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to see the results, but I wouldn't want it actually be done to you without your.
Well, I was going to say sounds. More like, I don't think you want to be near me to see the results because I'm that bouncy and like. Too much giggling, too much like I can't hold anything. I'm shaking too hard. It's not fun.
I have all the rock stars you could ever dream for if you ever want any.
I'm good. Thanks. I've learned my lesson. But tea is amazing, and I will have tea all the time. So that's why, like, when people start bringing up coffee and they talk about like different coffees, how they're better than this and this and that and the other, I sit there and go, I know what Starbucks is. And I know like the coffee places.
So what's your?
I know the good coffee places around us because I have a coffee drinker in the house, who is obsessed with good coffee. So I at least can figure that out. So whenever we have guests over,
even Pflugerville, there's no good coffee.
Hey, no, there's two really really good.
I mean, Dunkin' Donuts.
No.
Hey, don't you blaspheme Dunkin' Donuts?
nearby coffee. If you have not had it and you are in the Pflugerville area, Austin area, whatever, come find nearby coffee.
Pflugerville.
And they like actually.
It's a fake
the
place.
Person who does the roasting did her thesis on coffee beans
on
and
fake places.
Coffee beans. No, she did her thesis on roasting coffee beans and the processes of getting good coffee out of coffee beans. That was her thesis, her scientific thesis. So,
do they sell their roasting?
Oh yeah, they sell them. They're starting to sell them more and more places. So go to nearby. It's good stuff.
Okay, all right. I did just get a cold brew kit.
Oh, nice.
And so I've started playing around with doing some cold brewing, which, by the way, works amazing for tea as well as for coffee.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's fun.
Especially, I really Lipton like, tea. There's a, yeah, Lipton, that's right. No, there's a really good Japanese tea called Hojicha, which is a roasted green tea. Mm. Yeah. And so it has a bunch of like super delicious, like smoky, roasty notes. And that is perfect for a cold brew tea.
Hmm. I have to see if so. ZT is my favorite here in Austin, and I will have to see if they have it.
Right. I mean, I get mine when I go to Tokyo. To do.
Well, yeah, just keep dropping that name. Just
you gotta
drop
do what you
it
gotta
in.
Do.
Drop it every time, every opportunity you have.
Oh, it makes me happy. Yeah. Well, Laura, you added something that I wanted to ask you about. You said buying glasses when you can't see the frames on your face. And then it's just a prompt I haven't really come across very often.
So for those of you who have like ever bought glasses, one of the things they do.
Three out of the four of us.
Well, I didn't know if you have contacts on or not. I have no idea. But One of the things they do is
he was born perfect.
They have you go around.
This is all natural, baby.
Organic and free range. AF.
Oh god.
Look it up. So anyway, one of the things they have you do when you go get glasses is they say, go try on some frames, see how they look on your face.
I love that. It's the dumbest exercise.
It's the stupidest thing because they've taken my glasses, the ones that I can see out of. And now I have to go around to like the walls of the store and I'm like trying them on. And I'm going to put that in gigantic quotes because I put them on my face and then I have to like feel around for a mirror because yes, I am that near and farsighted that I like can't see anything other than like large shapes without my glasses on. And like I have to
Also dilated your eyes.
Well, right? So luckily this time they didn't. But yes, I've had it where they've dilated my pupils and I can't see anything. And they tell me, go try them on, see how they look to you. And I'm like, I am literally inches from the mirror trying to tell how this looks on my face. So the last time I went, and which is recently, I actually have new glasses on. Thankfully, my camera's not good enough right now that you can see them because I think they're horrible.
Oh.
I didn't bring anybody with me. So I'm going by myself. And I like, everybody was busy in the store and the whole thing. And I think the person was just trying to get me done and out of the way.
Mm.
So she's like, that pair looks great on you. That pair looks great on you. And I'm like, I hope it does. I'm going to find out in 2 weeks when I get it back. Thankfully, I have my good pair that I still need to go get the glasses done. But seriously, I don't understand this concept of like, go try it on, see if they look right to you. You say that to somebody who has really bad problems with far.
And they know how bad your vision is. Like, exactly. You've been literally like, looking at the prescription. So they're really just telling you, please go play in traffic. I'm busy.
Right. Like, exactly. I'm just like, this doesn't make any sense. So I've learned my lesson that I have to bring somebody with me the next time I go glasses shopping. Because, yeah. It's entertaining.
Now, your camera's pretty shit, so we can't see too well. But they look okay to me.
For those of you who can't actually see me, because podcasting is a visual medium, they're very wide for my face. The shape is bad. They are wide.
Very wide. They're a little.
They're driving me crazy. I'm just losing sanity with these on.
Well, we'll get a good photo of you in them and put that on as the cover art. That'd
be great.
No, we can. We can. I'm not that.
I think the only trick I've kept in mind is like, I sometimes like, if I honestly can't see the reflection because it's too far away, I'll use my phone and look at the glasses in the phone, like a little pocket mirror. I've really just started using, I've been obsessed with Warby Parker since they started.
Is it good?
I have only used them exclusively since they came out, which is like 7 years ago. It's less than $100 for really fashionable glasses, and they'll send you 5 pair that you can try on at home at your convenience, or they're brick and mortars all over now. But I just get the home, I choose 5, they send me a box, I mess around with them, snap some pics, and then I choose the one I want and go on with it.
Right. So they send you a set of 5 really fashionable glasses, and then you like, no, just give me the Harry Potter one.
Exactly. Which ones come with the lightning bolt? I want the lightning bolt ones.
I've done the like the phone picture thing. My problem is I still can't see, especially when you have a mask on. Like this was the big one this time, is the mask was on my face. So like I can't actually get them on my face. So that's what
perfect.
Yeah, it was the best buying experience. I hope you catch the sarcasm dripping out of my voice. But anyway, go ahead, JJ.
Now did you wipe the last person's COVID off them before?
They supposedly sanitized everything first.
They put in like a red box.
I'll take their word for it.
Yeah, trust is a wonderful thing. JJ, what were you saying?
Oh, I was saying you mentioned that Warby Parker or something.
Warby Parker.
My oldest, her first set of glasses were from there, and it was an amazing experience across the board. We did both. We went to the brick and mortar and the Domain. That was, they also did the sanitizing. We saw them actually sanitizing it, so that was good. And then we got a couple of the different styles and wrote them down.
Cool.
And then we went home and ordered the five to figure out the two that she wanted out of those five or whatever. So we were able to like see with what she was wearing and stuff like that. And it was a great experience. It was absolutely great. So
it's really cool. They do the best prescription sunglasses I found, which is a real pain. And I've also heard their transition lenses are pretty quick. So if you ever do want to take the risk of looking really dumb with transition lenses, I'm actually thinking about getting a pair from them. Cause I think
love mine.
I love the idea of not being this guy who's walking around switching glasses with both hands.
Yeah.
It's so annoying.
These are my first pair that aren't transition. I absolutely adore transition glasses.
What made you change back?
I think I couldn't find this one in, or so, there was like some specific, very specific reason, but I promised myself next one is definitely going to be transition, because walking outside in Texas, you walk out and you want your eyes to go completely black because it's just so fucking bright outside.
Yeah. Well, so my thing with transitions is, I mean, I've had glasses since before they came out, and I still remember the first pair that came out and they were trying to like sell them to me. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why are they always yellow? And they're like, oh, well, there's some ambient light in the room. I'm like, so basically I'm going to constantly be having sunglasses on and I can't see anything.
Mm.
That's great. But maybe they've gotten better. I hope they have. If they work for you.
That's the thing. I saw a really good demo from them, and I'm like, why am I so resistant to this? And I'm like, my dad would constantly embarrass me. Like he'd be just be like in a place talking to people, but his glasses would still be, it'd still look like he had sunglasses on for like 20 minutes, half an hour.
Yeah.
We'll be at like synagogue on a Saturday, and like we're already late because we were always late. And like the rabbi is praying, and my dad might get called up to do a prayer, and he's got sunglasses on effectively.
Yeah.
So it's like, I will never in my life get these. You know, the world has come to a better place.
It's true.
Anyway, sorry to exclude you from this, Paul. I know that it's hard. It's that you're not cursed with the need for glasses like the rest of us.
You can actually get like those nice $10 sunglasses.
I just feel like you should have all just gone and gotten yourself some Plenty Wingo glasses.
Plenty Wingo.
I was gonna say his text is just massive on his laptop. His text is just massive. It just doesn't admit that he can't see anything.
Yeah.
So Plenty Wingo,
the hell is this?
Is an American that decided to walk around the world backwards.
What?
Oh, dear.
And he bought a pair of glasses that had mirrors on them, on the sides, so he didn't have to keep his head turned.
Oh, geez.
This is...
So he managed to walk from California to Istanbul.
I see.
Obviously,
that.
He
directly
took a few boats. He took a few
the
boats.
The man who walked backwards, birthday in 1895.
And died in 93.
Wow.
Oh, man. So.
Wow. In Wichita Falls, Texas. Huh.
How?
Yeah, he started in Texas and walked all the way up to New York before he headed towards Europe.
Backwards?
Which is a bit weird. Backwards.
Why over and over again? Why are you doing this?
so apparently, according to Wikipedia,
TV wasn't invented
yet. Well, according to Wikipedia, this was around the onset of the Great Depression. His diner got closed, so he was out of work, and stunts were commonplace, I guess, to make money or something.
Yeah, I mean, that was back when you used to do exciting things like push peanuts up a mountain with your nose.
So he's the 1800s years version of Jackass. Is that what's going on here?
Kind of. Yeah, I guess you can think of it that way. Just not like intending to hurt other people.
No, I think it's more just the like he's the social media influencer of the
19th century. That's the analogy we're looking for.
You know, walking backwards across the world is just his way of thotting it up.
Put it on the gram. It's fine.
Oh, my God. Oh, that is.
Don't forget to like and subscribe.
That was honestly, it's inspirational because you know what? Just we all could do something half as disappointing as this.
He ended up with.
Say I got something disappointing enough, and it's a great transition. I'm going to be making gumbo this weekend. All right.
I was just going to quickly say, oh god, we keep talking over. Okay, start again. Say it again. What's happening this weekend?
I'm going to be making gumbo this weekend.
Tell us how you're going to make gumbo.
Have you got I had one. I lost it, so I'm going to look for a new one. But I'm going to do the roux by hand, and I'm going to.
Well, it's not gumbo if you don't do the roux by hand.
You know, I'm just saying, I'm going to do it by hand. And
You know, if you had have come to one of my several New Orleans gumbo pop-ups down at Tamale House East at any time, JJ, you would have been able to try my delicious gumbo.
Keep dropping that, Paul. Just keep working it.
Wait, did you have a pop-up on gumbo? Is this even real? I don't know what's real anymore.
Oh, yeah, I've done like 20 or so pop-ups.
Okay, Paul, what is the most ridiculous pop-up you've done?
It depends. Like the most ridiculous, like the weirdest would definitely be doing a Mexican pop-up in Tokyo and having to carry most of the ingredients in a suitcase with me. I literally had a suitcase just for the ingredients.
I love that so much.
With like massive cans of like beans and chilies and massive bags of dried chilies and all that stuff. Yeah.
Love it.
And super illegal, but I like it. What?
It's only illegal if you get caught in by customs.
But gumbo? Why gumbo?
Who are you asking why gumbo?
A friend
too?
That I do. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I don't care about JJ. JJ. Wait, no, Paul.
Well,
okay. So.
That was more categorical than I meant. But.
So, a friend of mine, Russell Reeves, kicked off doing the pop-ups, and he is from that area originally. And then he also moved back there. So we used to do it like every second month or so, but now we do it once a year, but we haven't done it for a couple of years for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
And so, cause he's only coming over like once a year to do it from New Orleans, he kind of brings New Orleans with him. And so the last few have just kind of been New Orleans, like gumbo, and then we do other stuff. Like we did fried catfish, bringing it back to JJ from earlier.
Yes.
And so I did that, which I did. Actually, did katsu sandos on the side for that as like a special treat for friends.
You
and
absolutely got to tell me the next time you mess with that. That's my jam. That sounds amazing.
Catfish.
Okay.
Ceviche?
Well,
for those who don't know what that is,
wait. Are we making catfish jam?
What jam? Are we back to jam? That'd be great.
Well, you just said it was your jam.
Oh, yeah.
It is.
The catfish is your jam?
Very protein-heavy jam. I'm so lost right now. What's just going on?
Cook it down with a lot of sugar in it.
Exactly, exactly right. You're being a real pectin right now, JJ. Hey. JJ, tell us about why. Sorry, Laura. We're just going to pretend all that made sense. JJ, why are you messing with gumbo?
So I've actually made it from scratch a couple times, and my wife accidentally bought one more andouille sausage on a shipped order recently, and I looked at it and I was like, that's andouille sausage, I have nothing to do with it. Hey, it's been a while since I made gumbo, fuck it, I'm making gumbo this weekend. So
I love it. That's perfect.
That's basically the way to go.
Happy accident. That's a happy accident right there.
Now, have you ever made JJ cassoulet?
I made really cookies with Kit Kats in them.
What's cassoulet?
Oh, that's the same thing. So cassoulet is a super traditional French white bean stew.
Okay.
That it's definitely not the same thing as gumbo, but you mentioned andouille sausage, and andouille sausage is originally French, and it's one of the primary proteins when you make a cassoulet. It's usually duck confit and andouille sausage are kind of the two things that usually go.
So duck confit.
And oh my god, it is so good.
Duck confit is pretty much top three favorite foods. So like I found cassoulet by accident through that, and it's got a really great history too. In that book On Food and Cooking by Howard McGee, he has old recipes throughout history, and he has one from like one of the chefs from Charlemagne. And his cassoulet recipe and like directly translated from the cookbook from whenever Charlemagne was alive. I can't tell you which century. 16th, but I'm gonna fuck it up. But yeah, so it's just, it's really classic. It's really rich and flavorful and stewy and satisfying. Nice. But anyway, the gumbo sounds badass too, man. You should totally do that.
Plan.
Laura, what are you up to? Any fun cooking plans?
No. I probably will end up making some, we make s'mores ramekins. We're thinking about just having a little bit of fun. S'mores ramekins are delicious. They're like little miniature s'more, like pie cakey things, I guess I could call them. But cool, they're circular. I'm making a gesture with my hands, and of course no one on the podcast can see it because this is a visual medium. But you take these little circular ramekins that are probably about the size of your hand, and you smash graham crackers and butter together and a little bit of sugar, make that like your crust. So you're making a graham cracker crust, and then you put chocolate inside and then put marshmallow pieces on top, and then you put believe it or not, we actually cook them in the air fryer because it's so hot here that we're trying to avoid cooking in the oven. But it works. Wow. It works really well in the air fryer, believe it or not. So,
all right. Cool. Can I suggest some upgrades here?
Well, you don't like s'mores, so I don't know if I really want to hear your upgrades.
That's why I'm going to give you some upgrades. So graham cracker crust, great. When you do the chocolate, do you do like a chocolate ganache kind of thing?
I've done that before. Or do you just dump chocolate into it? No, we actually just take chunks of really good dark chocolate and put it inside.
All right.
And that melts.
Because what I was going to say is if you do like a chocolate ganache and then do an Italian meringue top and then good. just torch the Italian meringue, and that's going to give you a delicious
meringue sucks.
It's thing good. That's s'mores, yes, but also
I'll die on this hill. Meringue is gross. I'll go for the...
but hang on. Hold on a second. What are you talking about? Marshmallows are meringue.
Marshmallows are different. Wait, is it categorically the same? I thought meringue is...
So there are two Italian types of marshmallows.
Yeah.
There's the... Yeah. Well, marshmallows. Oh. So there's the sugar-based ones that are basically you just whip the shit out of some sugar. And then you have the egg white-based ones, which are effectively meringues, which are kind of the highbrow and the lowbrow.
Right.
So the standard marshmallows you get are just the kind of whipped sugar.
Yeah. And I'm really lowbrow on my... marshmallow, so
it's not the only one.
Okay. Technically, marshmallow is a root, and you like grind it and whip it, and it sort of turns into a gummy thing.
Yeah,
and that's where the origin of marshmallow is.
They don't make
but
it
it's
that way
pretty
anymore.
Horrible yeah. for all from everything.
Oh
I've heard.
Man,
yeah.
So that's don't weird. Do that.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, so, but yeah, I'll probably make the little ramekins because we are actually talking about having a movie night with Fast and the Furious. JJ suddenly looked up at that. So I don't know what we'll actually cook, but we've been talking about maybe having a little movie night over the weekend just to kind of relax inside. So
just you and the family.
Nice. Me and Landon and the dogs. Yeah, that's about it. So
I love it.
Well, and the family.
The family.
And, well, yeah, and the family.
The
but
family.
I mean, it's all family.
Come
it's
on.
Always about the family.
Paul, because you couldn't have set her up any better.
It's very good.
Well, I'm going to grill for my neighbors tonight.
Oh, nice.
I've got some marinating. I'm really getting obsessed with flat iron steak. I feel like it's exactly what I thought. Like it's as easy to cook up as flank steak, or not flank steak, what I'm thinking, hanger steak.
Mm-hmm.
But it's lot cheaper because hanger got really popular, and I feel like it's got just the right fat quantity where like a nice medium rare, like just a few minutes per side, and slice it after a few minutes and it's just magical. So I've really enjoyed it lately, and I'm gonna grill up a couple of those. And I actually need some advice. I'm awful at making potatoes, but I feel like a steak and potatoes type meal would be lovely. I just got like the little what do you call them, like the fingerling potatoes, like the smaller guys.
Oh no.
No. I know like russet, like the big guys are handy too, but I'm just, if I've got like medium-sized potatoes, I love the idea of like slicing them, having a little oil and grilling them, but I think I need to boil them first or something so that they get cooked through all the way. What's any tips?
So it depends if you cut them
small enough
thin-ish, you can totally grill them. You can also wrap them in foil and just throw them on the coals. Yeah. But the smaller potatoes will overcook quicker. You could totally cook them first, then like put them in like some melted butter with a bunch of herbs and let them just sit, and then like grill that. Mm. And if you have one of those like grill pans with like the holes in the bottom, yeah, that you could cook that would actually be a really good way to.
So you're saying boil them,
boil them so they're cooked.
Yep. So fork tender,
and then like basically drain them, dump them in melted butter with like herbs.
I've got
and
fresh
garlic,
rosemary,
and whatever
from my neighbor's garden. Perfect. With like salt, pepper, olive oil, and just.
Perfect.
That sounds amazing. Cool. I'm gonna do that.
Yeah, you got it.
Thank you. It's also like fig season. So we've got just been eating an unbelievable amount of figs. And Adele makes this really good like almond meal fig tart that I can't do justice exactly what goes into making it, but I will probably eat half of that tonight. It's got like sugar crusted like fig halves in the top of this like almond meal, gluten-free but really rich and lovely kind of baked good. So dinner is going to be good tonight.
Nice.
Tasty.
How about you, Polly?
I have a chicken I just pulled out of the deep freeze that I think I got on a crowd cow order. So I'm thinking of maybe throwing that on the old rotisserie. And actually our JJ, I just got a bottle of the new Jess Pryles Tex-Mex seasoning. And so I was thinking of giving it a good rub down with that.
That sounds amazing. Keep me posted.
Sure. And maybe I'll grill some potatoes to go with.
Aw. It's like we're eating together.
Yay.
Eating together apart.
Cute. Oh, you know what would be another really good way to cook those potatoes?
I don't. That's why I asked.
So do exactly what we talked about, but when you're just about ready to cook them, if you've got like a flat top grill or you've got a big like flat pan or something, put them in that, and then get a spatula, like a heavy spatula or even like a potato masher, and just press down it and like smash it down. And then it's going to sort of like semi sort of like fry on that one side and then flip it and do it on the other side. And you get these like amazing crispy smashed potato things. And you can also do them. You can also finish them in the oven and get that same effect.
Yeah.
And that way you don't have to.
Tastiness.
Space.
Ooh, I'll think about that. That sounds wonderful. Well, everybody, thanks for a wondrous week and a some good food ideas.
Nomming.
Hope you have a great weekend, and I won't say enjoy Fast and the Furious, but we'll catch up after anyway.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.